Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it was just yesterday, I believe it was, that we were kind of biting our fingernails a little bit over Mitt Romney's kind of complacent campaign style. Maybe he's holding his powder dry for when more people are paying attention, or maybe he just really thinks the economy is going to be the ticket to victory for him. But he's back in our good martini today because, as expected, he won the June fundraising battle, and what we did not expect was perhaps the margin by which he did so. He raised $106 million in the month of June, $35 million more than President Obama, who, of course, is now panicking in emails to his supporters because, of course, through super PACs and other methods, he will clearly have nowhere near enough money to wage his campaign this year. But he's making himself out to be the victim like he normally does. Nonetheless, a big win in the fundraising total. Should be good news.
This is not the first month this happened. It was narrow in May. The Obama campaign had been beating the drum on this, saying, we've been outraised. We can't let this happen again. You know, but you really kind of, as you said, there's been this increasingly desperate tone to this on the Obama camp. And besides the fact that Obama has the typically relentless fundraising schedule and the Clooney's doing his shindig over in Geneva, Switzerland, and, you know, if you're on Obama's list, it just feels like you're getting a, you know, more spam asking for money than ever before. And it turned out to not be that close. So a couple interesting thoughts. One is the possibility that Obama has maxed out enough of his donors, that there's only a certain number of Americans who are going to be interested in donating to him, and the ones who really like him have given the most, and everybody else either isn't interested in giving any more, or perhaps in this economy can't afford to give any more. And boy, Greg, wouldn't it be ironic if Obama was hoist on his own petard of his donors are, you know, economic more dire shapes than they were 4 years ago. I don't know if you saw on Twitter yesterday, there was discussion of things overheard at Obama fundraisers. And one that I had was pretty well retweeted and enjoyed was, boy, you know, I know about you, it's a lot harder to find the money to donate this year than it was 4 years ago. People being oblivious to the idea that they are not better off now than they were 4 years ago. So I also understanding the campaign has not released their cash on hand figures, which certainly would, you know, if it was a good number, they'd put that out, wouldn't they, Greg?
Usually.
So all in all, this is, you know, look, not a reason for any Republican to necessarily break out the party hat and think that this race is won. It looks good that Romney will have the resources to make his arguments in the final months. Now you just hope that they, you know, have a good argument. All right, guys, you got the resources. Now use it. Show us how you're going to use this.
At least Obama's being consistent. You know, he spends way more money than he takes in terms of the actual government. And we know from previous months that he's been spending money at a much faster rate than Mitt Romney and didn't have as much cash on hand as people expected. So hopefully that trend has continued because this guy doesn't seem to have much discipline when it comes to finances whatsoever. Obama has been really beating the drum on this and didn't even get to the point where Romney was in May, even fell short of Romney's $76 million from May. And Romney definitely seems to be taking advantage of people who absolutely want Obama out of there. The slightly sobering part about that is a new Washington Post poll shows that 6 out of 10 Romney voters are voting for Romney because they hate Barack Obama, not because they're necessarily in love with Mitt Romney. Doesn't really matter why they pull the lever, but you just want to make sure there's some enthusiasm and people make sure they get out there and vote for Romney, whatever the reason is, come November. But on to martini number two now. And one of the things that the president has a tendency to do pretty much every day is make arguments that are not exactly based in fact. And unfortunately, some of them seem to be working. One of them is one he trotted out yesterday on raising taxes on the rich. And another one is one that he's been saturating the competitive markets with. And that is the accusation that Mitt Romney is an outsourcer and he is an insourcer. He likes to quote a Washington Post editorial that called Romney a pioneer in outsourcing during his days at Bain Capital. Jim, you have looked into this in much more detail than apparently the mainstream media is willing to do, and you found out that the actual outsourcing numbers are pretty lopsided, just not in the direction most people might expect.
No, I'd say precisely the opposite. Let's walk people through this, Greg. The first is that, so we've seen Romney's numbers in swing states take a bit of a dip since the general election began. And a lot of people said, all right, this is probably the result of Obama's ads. That's probably the most likely explanation. What message is in the ad? And it's all Bain, rich guy, Richie Rich, Thurston Howell. And the big message the last couple of weeks, you know, week or so has been outsourcing. And by the way, we should actually specify outsourcing is when one company has another company handle a job that it ordinarily would provide to itself. Like, you know, you can use a payroll company for outsourcing. Offshoring is when you use some foreign company to do the job that you used to do with, you know, within your own company, i.e. using a foreign factory to manufacture your widgets or something like that. So a couple interesting angles here. The first is that the entire Obama attack on Romney is apparently false, because that Washington Post piece that they're relying the whole thing on is about offshoring of companies, and all of these things were done in late 1999, 2000, 2001, this era, which was when Mitt Romney was off running the Olympics. Now, the Obama claim is that, well, technically Romney still had his position. Well, yeah, but every day he was, you know, fixing the ski jump and all kinds of other stuff out in Salt Lake City. So the argument is that, you know, so Romney should be held accountable for decisions that involved offshoring when he was not running Bain. And I think most people would kind of roll their eyes at that and say that's not really a terribly credible or legitimate line of argument or attack against Mitt Romney. So, you know, the other thing is that, look, well, has Barack Obama ever done something like this? And you say, well, no, of course not. Barack Obama has absolutely no private sector experience of any significant nature, so he couldn't have done this. But if you want to take a look at how the government handles these sorts of things, it turns out that a new study just came out from the folks at Bloomberg, the news service, not the mayor. It turns out that about $29 billion worth of services have been provided to the U.S. government at taxpayer expense by foreign companies, including some that are basically effectively run by the Russian government. Now, some would argue, well, these are things that only the Russian government can provide, i.e., you know, helicopters that are used in Afghanistan that we're trying to provide to the Afghanistani army and its equivalent air force, that they only know how to fly Soviet and Russian-made helicopters, so we got to use a Russian company. I'd like to think that American companies might be able to compete for that, but hey, it was a no-bid contract. But then there's other things like the fact that we don't have a space program anymore, and we now contract to the Russians to take our astronauts up to the International Space Station. Then you look to other things like BP, the foreign oil company, food companies. You know, billions of dollars are spent on foreign companies to provide stuff like food, oil, helicopters, you know, things that we could do in this country if we wanted to. So, but it comes out in the argument of offshoring, well, actually, Mitt Romney never did any when he was at Bain. You know, Bain did it when he wasn't around. And then secondly, if you want to think about, sheer numbers, Barack Obama is probably the biggest offshorer in the entire country, because I don't think there's a single U.S. company that does $29 billion worth of contracts of foreign manufacturers and foreign companies. It's good to see that Romney is finally turning the tide on this. They have the RNC put out a huge report on this today. Apparently, they're going to start running ads, basically calling Obama a liar on this. We will see if the damage is done. Romney is down a little bit in the swing states. One little detail worth noting, though, is that apparently the Washington Post poll out this morning, they asked people, is Romney's Bain record a reason to vote for him, vote against him, or neither? And about 20-some percent said it was a reason to vote for him. About 20-some percent said it was a reason to vote against him. And about 50% said it wasn't really affecting their thinking one way or the other. So it's possible this attack really hasn't been as effective as it appears to be. And it may just reflect Obama dominating the airwaves in these key swing states. But I still get the feeling that offshoring and outsourcing has turned into this sort of magic talisman word that gets exactly the result the Obama campaign wants to see so far. So something to keep an eye on, and hopefully Romney will have a really good continuing counteroffensive on this topic, since we don't want to make the election about anything like the economy or anything like that, do we, Greg?
And unfortunately, there's a compliant press corps that will not do a lot of fact-checking, so they'll continue to spread Obama's message for him for free, even though, as Jim just explained, it's not true. So if that troubles you about the Democrats, let's go to Martini number three now. And there are a number of incumbent House Republicans, particularly in competitive districts. Jim Renacci, I think is how you say his name, Renacci, maybe in Ohio. Reid Ribble in Wisconsin, up around the Green Bay area. These guys are just among some of the House Republicans who are essentially being stalked by Democratic operatives. These people are sitting outside their house, filming their house, streaming raw footage constantly. They are basically harassing these people, following them to the grocery store. The DCCC is very much involved with this, and they essentially say they're just going to throw that raw footage out there so special interest groups can take the footage and use it however they want, and that way there won't be any collusion on the part of the DCCC and these groups. Jim, I know politics is a dirty business and we shouldn't be overly surprised, but you've got a lot of family members here and wives in particular who are just completely creeped out by these people that just won't leave them alone.
This is why good, normal people don't go into politics. because why would you want to deal with any of this? Sure. Or even if you want to deal with this, why would you want to make your family put up with nonsense like this? It's interesting to see the trend of what they call the trackers, the idea of people following around with small video cameras, because if your candidate makes some awful gaffe, you know, some ridiculous statement or something that could reflect very badly upon them, you want to catch it on video. So that's how you started seeing in 2006. We all remember George Allen and Macaca and stuff like that. So my attitude is any public event is fair game. Anytime a candidate is speaking to voters is a fair game. And if somebody wants to, you know, try to talk to them after the event or as they're, you know, I suppose you're free to, and I think the candidate is perfectly free to ignore that sort of thing. Bob Etheridge could very well have ignored the two kids who were asking him his question about Obamacare instead of reaching out and grabbing the kid by the neck and, you know, going on to become known as the North Carolina Strangler. This stuff, this is pure Peeping Tom stuff, Greg. And the only thing it kind of reminded me of, just to show of just how bizarre, things that seem bizarre in politics eventually become mainstream. In 2006, Ned Lamont, the Democrat running against Joel Lieberman up in Connecticut, was one of the, as far as I know, the first candidate to ever feature Daily Kos's Marcos Moulitsas in a campaign ad. It pictured Lamont sitting in his living room talking about, I believe in a better, you know, all the kind of stuff you'd expect to see. But in the background, you just see this figure looking, you know, come through the bushes and looking in the window. It's a small, creepy figure, and it turns out it's Marcos Moulitsas, who is peering in through the window in a true horror movie stalker fashion. And he comes through the front door and he's brought all these supporters. Marcos, what are you people doing here? Well, everyone's so excited about your campaign, Ned, blah, blah, blah. And if you and I were parodying ludicrous ads, this is sort of really the kind of concept we would want to do. And probably if you and I wanted to damage a Democratic candidate, we would probably want to tie them as closely as possible to Marcos Moulitsas and the crowd at Daily Kos. Lo and behold, Ned Lamont did not win. He, you know, Joe Lieberman went on to get elected as an independent. But now the peering in the window tactics celebrated in that ad back in 2006 are now completely mainstream policy of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. So you would think behavior like this would kind of single-handedly undermine the entire notion of progressivism and the idea that we get better at things. Sometimes we regress. Sometimes the ball rolls back further down the hill and you end up with a coarser, uglier, more ridiculous and just horrific politics. And this is the world we have. But, you know, hey, you know, Greg, it's exactly the kind of world you want to bring a child into, isn't it?
Yes. I can't wait. Jim.
Well, you know, at least your child will have a good dad. So,
well, I certainly hope so. Thank you for that. I will be out probably for the next several days for that very reason. Jim Garrity will be joined by Brett Winterbull in my place during most of that time. Jim, we'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg. Good luck.
Thank you, sir. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join actually Brett and Dan Foster tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.